It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Hour number 2 of the Drive underway. Fan Run Radio, Top 4 at 4, brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Tucker Harlan, hit it.
Thank you, Russell. At number 1, Tennessee continues its series against Missouri tonight at 6:30 in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Drew Beam will get the start for the Vols tonight. And, of course, Tennessee started the series with a 10-1 victory over the Tigers last night.
Tennessee looking to break out the whooping sticks a little bit. Now, does Missouri throw their ace tonight as well?
Yes.
Oh. It's interesting how teams are doing that, because we saw that two weeks ago with LSU.
What was really strange was who they started last night.
That's a bullpen guy, right?
Yeah, he was one of their better kind of relievers, wasn't he?
Yeah.
We'll ask Logan what the reason for that is, but obviously Tennessee's been doing it as well with Drew Beam, so it'd be a good pitching matchup tonight over at the ballpark.
At number 2, the Atlanta Falcons pulled off the biggest shocker of the NFL draft Thursday night, taking Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr. with the number 8 pick. Kirk Cousins' agent, Mike McCartney, said the Falcons did not tell the quarterback they would pick Penix until the team was on the clock. McCartney said there is both frustration and confusion coming from Cousins' camp because Atlanta did not use its first-round pick to make the team better in 2024.
Well, I mean, the odd part about it is I don't think Arthur Blank was aware that they were picking.
That to me is way more strange than them not telling Cousins. They tell Cousins, he tells his agent, the agent leaks it, tries to get it blown up. That makes perfect sense. I've never understood people, the quarterback should have known. No, that'll get it blown up. That'll get him taken away from you if you really want him. Arthur Blank's reaction, however, that's going to get a GM fired if this blows up in their face.
Yeah, it's interesting. They did say that they called Cousins right before the pick was announced to kind of fill him in, which must have been a shocking phone call. Didn't this happen similarly a couple of years ago? There was a free agent quarterback signing somewhere, and then a team drafted a quarterback. Was it the Cardinals had signed maybe somebody, and then they took Josh Rosen, I want to say?
I'm forgetting, because I know Rosen and then Kyler Murray.
Or was it maybe Brock Osweiler? There was a similar situation where a quarterback was signed to.
It may have been a Denver thing. Was it the kid from who was the kid from Memphis?
Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, Paxton Lynch.
Was he involved? It was very similar.
There was a similar situation like this a couple of years ago. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you, Chris. I don't know that they. You can say that it's a bad decision and. Perhaps it was. I don't know that the team necessarily owes Kirk Cousins an explanation. It's Arthur Blank's franchise, and he's hired Fontenot to be the GM. They can do what they want to do. I don't think they necessarily owe Kirk Cousins.
But from the visuals we saw last night, it certainly looks like Terry went full J-Rob and just didn't tell anybody what he was doing.
Yeah, which is
full draft day.
He's on the hook, man. Like that's if that's true, good luck to him.
At number 3, the NFL has taken a new step in player safety today. Guardian caps, which are essentially helmet shells, have been authorized for in-game use as a mean to prevent serious head injuries.
In-game?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my argument about these things been the whole time. Like, if we're making the kids use them in spring practice because it prevents concussions and head injuries, why are we not wearing them in games?
Well,
because they're ugly.
There's another side of this too, is that players may become a little bit more prone to throw their heads around a little bit if they know they have that extra layer of protection.
Who's the old timer that said if you really want to get rid of the head injuries altogether, you take the helmet away. You take the helmets off.
Either that, or I've heard take the face. People stop leading with their head if you take the face mask off.
So. Is it going to be mandatory? Can some do it and some not? That's going to look really weird.
It doesn't sound like it's mandatory, but it's just, if you want it and you've had a few concussions and say you want to protect yourself, then that's what it sounds like they're going for here.
I totally see them putting them on all the linemen. Those guys, every snap.
That's just – I'm
with helmet-to-helmet contact.
So are you going to try and
– put a logo on there? Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Ryan!
What can you do to make this not look so stupid?
Can you print that on a Guardian? Can you screen print that?
Sorry if it's screwing up the aesthetics for you and Houston. I figured we'd be all about maybe these guys not getting their eggs scrambled.
I get where you're coming from, but the uniform policy in the NFL is ironclad. Like, you break that policy, you don't fit. Oh, your socks not high enough. Oh, your pants don't cover your knee. Here's $30,000 in fines.
Yeah, I mean, they've actually loosened up over the years.
A little bit, yeah. But, man, that's just
especially on the sock thing. Like, now you can pretty much tell that they're wearing ankle socks.
That's going to be so – yeah, they're like tights. Yeah. That's weird. And not going to like the look of that.
And finally, at number four, Kansas continues to have a great offseason in basketball. Hunter Dickinson officially using his COVID year of eligibility. And Alabama transfer Rylan Griffin has committed to the Jayhawks this afternoon as well. So that – those two guys, you can combine that with A.J. Storr of Wisconsin coming there and Riley Kugel from Florida for a potential starting lineup, maybe even depth pieces.
At Kansas. I didn't realize Rylan Griffin, I didn't think he was that good.
Averaged 11 a game.
I mean, in Dickinson, I mean, I can't be the only one that saw his shoulder completely. Like, it was sticking out in, like, four different directions.
But he came back and played in the tournament.
He wasn't the same. He had it all strapped down. I mean, I'm sure they'll have it rehab, but
how much eligibility does this guy have? I seem to remember him playing with Jacques Vaughn and Rafe LaFrance.
So I was scrolling through Twitter earlier today. Said he's born in November of 2000. That guy is over a year older than me, and he's got more college eligibility than me.
Amazing.
Don't you worry, Tucker. Your time's coming, man.
That's true.
I call up any minute now.
Is that it?
He's been around for a minute. Yes, that's it.
Good one, Tucker. Good job, bud.
Thank you, Tucker. Top 4 at 4 brought to you this afternoon by our friends at Knoxville Smiles. It's where I go for all my dental work. They do outstanding work at Knoxville Smiles, locally owned and operated dental practice. It's not these guys that fly in from out of town and just you have that conveyor belt assembly line type mentality over here. Great folks, Dr. Steve Malone's who I go to. Also love Dr. Mike Acosta, his lovely wife, Bree, and Dr. Wolkow now over there as well. They got a whole crew doing great work at Knoxville Smiles. Give them a call. Tell them Fan Run sent you. 865-539-1776 is the number to set up an appointment today. That's 539-1776. You can also check them out, make your appointment online the new fashioned way at Knoxville Smiles. com. Hour number two of the drive getting underway here on Fan Run Radio. We're going to go out to the Music City here and visit with our friend, proud graduate of the Fan Run Academy of Broadcasting, or FAB, if you will, Lucas Widespread Panzeca of 104.5 The Zone, set to join us here in just a few moments to talk NFL Draft Day 2 coming up tonight, rounds 2 and 3. Will Jalen Wright hear his name called this evening? And interesting thought that just struck me as we were discussing the run on quarterbacks and Penix and Bo Nix going in the first round as well. Does the unexpected run on quarterbacks make it more likely that Joe Milton will in fact be drafted and maybe even a little bit higher than some of us were expecting?
Oh, I fully expect him to get drafted. Yeah. Somebody's going to take a chance on him. Why would you not? It's like buying a lottery ticket. He's probably not going to hit it, but boy, if it does.
Well, the only two teams I've heard him linked to, the only team he had a visit with, he only had one visit.
Really?
Yeah, it was with the Browns.
Oh, no.
Interesting.
And then the other team that he's been linked to that I've seen him mocked to a lot was the Buffalo Bills with the obvious Josh Allen comparisons there, just in terms of build and arm strength, and like you could kind of see that
mobility. Yeah.
So I mean, like we talk about a team taking a flyer on him, and I think that's what it would be. But I find it hard to believe you take a flyer on somebody that you haven't, especially at that position that you haven't met with in person, face to face.
The Bills actually is a pretty interesting one because the big knock on Josh Allen was, oh, he's just a power thrower. He can't hit the short stuff. He can't read a defense.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and then
they kind of
– and the way he plays, I mean, any snap, he's liable to take the wrong hit and have to come out of the game. That
I mean, even best case scenario, I mean, he needs what, two? He's going to need to sit, even as old as he is. That's the other part of it. He's old.
Learn behind.
You're talking about a year or two, he's going to have to sit and learn how to. And I still don't understand how you fix his accuracy. I mean, I guess in the NFL, there's a better chance that his receivers will be harder for him to overthrow just because they've got NFL-level speed. But
a lot of the problems with Allen are very, very similar to Milton. It was like too much heat on the short stuff.
They taught, no touch
they
at all.
Yeah, they taught Allen how to, you know, put some touch on the short stuff, and it's actually worked out. I bet I'm not going to say a good fit. I don't know who would actually be a good fit for Joe, but that might be a good comp, at least. You could see some success with a player like him in the past.
Now, what about here's one for you. What about Jalen Wright?
He,
see him going tonight?
Oh, yeah. I think he's gone today. I don't. What's he at best available, 6th or 7th? I could see him going above that.
Yeah, you had no running backs taken last night.
That'll be curious to see what number, like which running back he ends up, like how many running backs go in front of him.
I'm trying to see what the – I know Corum, Tucker Corum's ahead of him, Brooks from Texas.
I'm looking right now.
The other names are Trey Benson, Florida State, Marshawn Lloyd of Southern Cal, and then right this best available on ESPN has him at 5.
I find it odd, and I don't know much about these other running backs in terms of what their measurables and everything were, mm-hmm. but the guy ran a sub. He ran a sub 4.4, right, at the combine?
Yeah, he ran a 4.3.
Second fastest of all the running backs. It doesn't give the actual number, but I think it was like, 4.38, 4.37.
Yeah.
He ran it twice. One, I think, was like a 4.37, and then I think maybe a 4.39.
Well, just goes to show how that position has been devalued amongst NFL general managers and franchises the past couple of years. Because if you could do that, 20 years ago, you're probably, second round at worst.
Oh, yeah. It is.
Well, his
it's
tape
unbelievable.
Is really, I mean, he busted that one against Georgia. I'm sure they're watching that one because all those guys from Georgia are going to be playing in the NFL. He ran away from everybody.
And then there were a lot of games where he ran over or at least bounced off of people. I mean, he's bigger than you think when you look at his measurables. Like, he plays a little bit bigger, but if he gets out in the open field, he has speed that he's just such a good strider.
Well, and if you look at his career, he's a guy that his senior year in high school was canceled because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So he split carries, didn't play a ton his freshman year, and then he split carries at Tennessee the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of tear on his body. Has not had any sort of serious injury. I think he had a little bit of a hamstring maybe.
Yep.
The beginning of his sophomore year. Nothing too major there. So you're getting a really healthy running back with his best football in front of him, who has gotten so much bigger.
He put in a lot of work. Remember how he used to get picked up his freshman year? Just like body slammed?
Yeah, I mean, he's speaks well for Tennessee's strength and conditioning.
That's what I was sitting here thinking, Russ. You know, we hammer those guys. They don't get a whole lot of credit when they should. But the strength and conditioning coaches usually are a frequent target from the fans. But, yeah.
Can you name Tennessee's strength and conditioning coach?
So I was getting ready to ask you. Honest to God, about 2 minutes ago, I was.
I can't, and I think that's a very good thing.
Well, he doesn't do any interviews. His name is Kurt Schmidt. He came with Tennessee – he came with Heupel from Central Florida, but he does not do interviews. Like, people have tried to line stuff up with him, and he's just one of these guys prefers to operate in the darkness, which, you know, there's different ways to skin a cat, but there have been several notable examples through the years at Tennessee and other schools of the strength coach being a fairly visible guy. Right, you'll see him on the sideline waving the towel, chest bumping, screaming, yelling at times. And Kurt Schmidt, I don't think, first of all, most people don't know his name, and most people wouldn't even know what he looked like. But that's the way he prefers to do it. And you remember when he got here, Tennessee had kept one of the guys. It was a younger guy. I cannot remember his name for the life of me, but he was one of the guys, one of Pruitt's guys. And it was almost like a co-strength coach thing when he first got here.
Yeah.
Because the feeling that I got just outside looking in was they didn't want to alienate the players. Hmm. That the strength coach was a younger guy that had come up through the ranks and had gotten an opportunity with Pruitt and related well to the players. But it was kind of an awkward situation because Heupel clearly wanted to bring in his guy, mm-hmm. Kurt Schmidt, mm-hmm. from Central Florida, but did not want to risk upsetting the locker room. But several months into the Heupel regime, I believe the guy went to South Florida or something like that. He kind of got the hint.
I think that's right, yeah.
He's like, hey, man, you know.
Crafty move by Heupel, really.
Yeah. So he ended up was able to placate the players who might have felt some kind of way about the situation while also giving power to the guy that he clearly wanted all along in Kurt Schmidt, who's, as we said, evidently doing work over there, getting these guys in shape. We got to take a quick timeout. J.C. Latham is in pretty good shape. He passes all the physical
tests.
Passes the eye test. He sure does.
Can he make the switch from the right side of the offensive line to the left side? We'll ask Lucas Panzeca, who no doubt has been discussing this all day on the Zone in Nashville. Stay with us. More draft talk coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Back here on The Drive, Fan Run Radio, cruising with you on a Friday afternoon, getting ready for a big sports weekend. Pleased to be joined by our old pal, Lucas Panzeca, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Titans Radio. Good afternoon, LP. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm good. Busy time. Oof. This is one of the best times of year, isn't it? Especially when you have like a local team like the Preds that are in the playoffs and then the chaos of the draft. NBA playoffs going on, too. I feel like this transition from April to May gets slept on in the sports calendar.
It's become one of my favorite times of year. I mean, and like, you know, you mentioned the Preds there, which I understand. Like, that's going to be a huge deal. Doesn't move the needle at all here in East Tennessee, but we got Tennessee baseball, which doesn't move the needle at all in Nashville. But, I mean, we geek out over this stuff, and, like, you didn't have that 10 years ago. That wasn't a thing that you talked about on local sports radio. And here we are in 2024. There's no shortage of show topics these days.
Life is good. Let's talk about it.
Let's do it, man. What was the consensus on the Zone today regarding J.C. Latham? A little bit of a surprise there that's who the Titans have. After all the talk between Joe Alt and Fashanu, Malik Nabers, yeah, there was a little bit of a J.C. Latham talk, but I feel like that was not a name that was broken down to levels beyond scientific, at least here in our world. It probably wasn't yours, but I was surprised.
Yeah, no, and I didn't really hear about it much. J.C. Latham, the idea of him going to the Titans, no doubt Joe Alt was the guy that was most commonly mocked to Tennessee, and, you know, Jim Harbaugh does the thing that I guess we should have expected Jim Harbaugh to do, and that's take the left tackle, despite the fact that you have a competent left tackle on that roster anyway, and a desperate need at wide receiver. Any other coach in the NFL would probably take a Malik Nabers in that situation, but it's Jim Harbaugh that's in that spot. He takes Joe Alt, and I firmly believe the Titans would have taken Joe Alt if he was available with that seventh pick. I did not hear J.C. Latham really brought up for the Titans until the day of the draft, where Todd McShay put out his mock draft with various nuggets and intel from around the league. And his thought was, if Alt is not there, the Titans love Latham and they'll probably go Latham. That's the first time I'd seen that. And it was a few hours before the draft. So you kind of banked that. And then the pick comes along. Nabers is off the board. Alt is off the board. And in the moment, I was more on the side of exploring a trade back, maybe dropping out of the top 10 into a spot where you feel confident Latham could still be available and get a third round pick out of it. Maybe get a first for next year if there's a QB desperate team kind of sitting outside of that top 10 like Denver or Vegas or Minnesota. And ultimately, you know, Rand Carthon was asked about that. He said they took some calls, but it had to be a really good offer. And Bill Callahan loves J.C. Latham. So I have said throughout this entire process, yeah, you know, I love Joe Alt because I am told Joe Alt is the best left tackle in this draft, right? Like Olufashanu, I am told, is the second best left tackle in this draft. I'm not crunching the tape on these guys. So my consistent opinion has been whoever Bill Callahan wants to play left tackle for his football team is who you need to go get. So I'm not going to turn around after the pick is J.C. Latham and say, oh, well, the guy can't play left tackle. If Bill Callahan believes he can play left tackle, I personally am not going to be the guy to come out and say, no, Bill Callahan is wrong about that. J.C. Latham is not a left tackle. So to answer your question, there hasn't really been a consensus among Titans fans. Some are all about it. They say it's a tackle, give Callahan free reign. Some are on the wrong side. They say, why do we have to take a guy that we don't even know if he can play left tackle at this level? So never a dull moment, but you knew it was going to be interesting no matter what when Neighbors and Alt were off the board and they got to seven.
So what is the consensus among your counterparts at the Zone and the listeners that you guys have interacted with today about Latham moving to left tackle? I mean, it feels like we are putting a lot of faith in Bill Callahan's ability to be an offensive lineman whisperer here, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that has been, I think, the prevailing opinion. It's like, all right, you know, it wasn't exactly what we were anticipating, but let Bill Callahan cook. Bill Callahan loves J.C. Latham. A lot of people love J.C. Latham. The majority of the experts have said Latham is a right tackle that could also play right guard. Bill Callahan thinks he can be a left tackle. We saw this with Jedrick Wills coming out of Alabama. Like Latham, top 10 pick with the Browns, had only played right tackle in college. Bill Callahan turned him into a serviceable left tackle for the Browns. So overall, I think the consensus has been let Bill Callahan cook on this thing. But I think it's fair for Titans fans to have some consternation about the fact that the seventh pick is now in the rear view and you still don't know without a shadow of a doubt if you have a left tackle, because Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan talked after the draft. They said, look, he's going to start left. We believe J.C. Latham is a left tackle. He's going to play left for us. But they did say, listen, if he's not comfortable there, if it doesn't work, we also know he can play right tackle. That's a need as well. And that's true. The Titans need it at both spots, but then you're left without a solution at left tackle too. So obviously that's Will Levis's blind side, and that's the thing that's plagued the Titans for the last couple of years. So while the prevailing opinion has been, Bill Callahan, do your thing, and Bill, we trust, I do understand some of those concerns about the whole thing about this number seven pick was wanting to feel secure about the fact that we have our left tackle set in stone at seven. And it's okay to not totally feel that because we've never seen J.C. Latham play the position since he left IMG Academy.
Well, that's a great way of putting it. You wanted to feel secure about left tackle after last night, and we don't. And we're going to go through a whole offseason of can he – won't he? And, you know, it's funny because I go back to a year from tonight or a year before today. We're sitting here talking about Skoronski. And am I wrong, Lucas? I feel like we kind of thought we were getting a left tackle when we get Skoronski. And then slowly it was like, no, we're actually going to play him at guard. So it almost feels like this is 2 years in a row of this.
Yeah. And then I get the frustration on that. That produced one of the snarkier Mike Vrabel answers in a presser, of which there were many, when he's asked, what position is he going to start at? And he said, we're going to start him at offensive line. It's like, all right, man, okay. But, I think Skoronski coming out, most analysts and experts viewed him as an interior guy. He played left tackle at Northwestern, but the Titans kind of left it open. They said, we're just going to bring him in, and we're going to see where he fits best. We just think he's a great offensive lineman wherever he ends up. And it was like, okay, but you obviously have a desperate need at left tackle. And Skoronski obviously did not fill that need, and he could be a very left guard for this team. You know, we could be in a year from now, this could be a non-issue. And the Titans are good. The left side of the line is set. J.C. Latham on the left and Peter Skoronski at left guard, Lloyd Cushenberry at center, and you're just kind of like wiping your hands. They find a right tackle along the way, and Bill Callahan's coaching them up like he has his entire career. It's not a bad fallback to have, right, that Bill Callahan is your offensive line coach. And I said it this morning that if last year's Titans coaching staff had made this pick, and it's first-time offensive line coach Jason Hoteling, who held that position under Vrabel, making this pick, and he was the one tasked with leading Latham into that transition, I'd be pretty iffy about it. I'd be like, I don't know that I can trust Jason Hoteling to govern this transition for J.C. Latham, but I feel very confident that I can trust Bill Callahan to do that. He was the most important hire of the offseason for Brian Callahan's coaching staff. So that is not the worst fallback to have if you have any concerns about J.C. Latham kicking out to the left side. And the dude is just an absolute mauler. I mean, you know, we know that. We saw him swallow up James Pierce a couple of times last year in the Tennessee game. I mean, J.C. Latham is a grizzly bear of a human. And I think all of his weaknesses, so to speak, on reasons that were used to say why he couldn't be on the left side are very coachable, and you can trust Bill Callahan to do that.
Lucas Panzeca with us this afternoon on the show. Lucas, I'm coming at this. I want your response to this take here, and I'm coming at it as a fan. You know, you work for the Zone and Titans Radio, so maybe I'm a little bit more emotional about this than you, but I just look at it as, all right, the past two Titans seasons have been completely blown up by an inability to protect the quarterback. Specifically, the left tackle position has been a huge problem. Had a chance to fix it last year, didn't really do it. Had a chance to fix it this year. We'll see. I just come at it from, if we are sitting here in November talking about a third consecutive season blown up specifically by poor play at left tackle, I'm going to be pretty pissed off about it. And I'm going to direct that frustration at Rand Carthon, because he was in the war room last year when you didn't fix it, and he was in the war room this year when you didn't fix it if it goes poorly. Is that an okay position to be taking up right now?
No, I think that's fair, man. I think that's fair if that is the case. If we get to November and we're sitting there, and look, just didn't work with JC on the left side, and you had to find a stopgap. You had to go get, you know, 31-year-old Andres Pete, who's been a serviceable tackle for the Saints in the last few years. He came in for a visit pre-draft. He's still on the market as a free agent, right? And then he gets hurt, and then you're stuck with NPF or whoever having to play left tackle while J.C. Latham holds it down on the right side. So you fix one side, but you're still getting blown up on the blind side of your young quarterback, and that's affecting the rest of the offense. You would absolutely have every right to be livid about that and be infuriated by it. But we'll see, man. With Alt off the board, they kind of were down to a couple of options, right? It was either take the best playmaker there, which would have been Odunze or a Brock Bowers, which, you know, and is, would have been very easy to get excited about. And a lot of Titans fans would have been calling in today thrilled about the fact that we got Brock Bowers, future Hall of Fame tight end and everything, but the left tackle issue still wouldn't have been fixed. Or it would have been to take Fashanu. Clearly, this coaching staff and Rand Carthon liked J.C. Latham and his ability to kick out to the left side more than they liked Olu Fashanu, who has always been a left tackle. And if that wasn't the case, they would have drafted Olu Fashanu. So, again, you just defer to Bill Callahan on these things. Best-case scenario, I think, for us and for the Titans would have been Joe Alt available. Joe Alt is the pick at 7. I guess my question back to you, Russ, would be, what would have been your alternative there? With Neighbors off the board, with Joe Alt off the board, what would have been – like, when the Titans were on the clock at 7, in that moment, what was your best-case scenario?
Well, fan brain Russ was thinking, to hell with it, just take Bowers. That's what fan brain – but I tell you what, and I go back to what you said earlier about just wanting a sense of security. I mean, like, taking Fashanu, like, at least we would have known, okay, that's going to be our left tackle next year. I understand you don't take him at 7, and maybe they tried to trade down and it takes 2 to tango. Who knows what the conversations were like behind closed doors. But that's kind of where I was at last night.
Sure. No, and that's fair. But then we'd still be sitting here having the same conversation, right?
Yes.
There'd be excitement about getting a playmaker in there, potentially, you know, one of the biggest talents in this draft in Brock Bowers. But, well, you still don't have a left tackle. And, yeah, it's a deep tackle class, but all the top guys would have been off the board. Tyler Guyton gone, Fuaga gone. And then you're talking about finding value at left tackle, and I think those concerns would still be there. So what we do know is we have a very high-level talent at the tackle position, just happens to be a guy that played on the right side. And for what it's worth, you know, J.C. Latham probably would have played left tackle at Alabama if Evan Neal hadn't been on the roster. Mm-hmm. And Evan Neal, another IMG Academy product, was another top 10 pick that was on that left side. And that was J.C. Latham's path to the field, was to play right tackle. Now, my biggest question would be, okay, why wasn't J.C. Latham the solution on the left side last year when you've got true freshman Caden Proctor in there? And he went through his struggles. Alabama had a lot of trouble on that left side with Proctor while Latham was on the right. And I guess the easy answer to that is Proctor didn't have the ability to play right tackle. He was probably their best option on the left with a dominant force in Latham on the right. So clearly this coaching staff, this administration is very confident in J.C. Latham's ability to play on the left side, that he's practiced in it. He's not foreign to it. He was the first number one tackle in his recruiting class coming out of the left side, out of IMG Academy. So, you know, like I said, if that is the fallback, I think, personally, that when you're talking about a left-tackle solution, I would rather have the fallback of one of the best tackle prospects in this draft that's going to be coached into a transition by Bill Callahan than a lesser prospect that's played left-tackle his whole life. I'd rather have the more talented kid understanding he's got arguably the best offensive line coach in the country.
All right. Well, looking forward tonight, you've got a pick at 38, no round three pick right now, unless you do some finagling here this evening. What do you think the Titans get done tonight and the rest of the weekend of the draft?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, you've got needs on defense up front, on the defensive line, at linebacker. You know, the list goes on. You know, I think there will probably be the run on receivers that we saw at the tail end of the first round, I feel like will continue. Ladd McConkey, I'd be shocked if he's there at 38 for the Titans. That's the sixth pick in the second round that the Titans have. So if he is, then I'd be surprised not to see Brian Callahan go with the best playmaker. But you need defensive line help, man, whether it's a Braden Fisk out of FSU or the kid out of Illinois or at linebacker. Junior Colson is a prospect that a lot of people really love. I think the Titans really enjoyed their top 30 visit with him. He's got a great story. Local guy, Ravenwood High School, and just an elite player at Michigan that never left the field and just was a centerpiece in the middle of that dominant defense under Jim Harbaugh. So I wouldn't hate that. You know, the Titans brought in Kenneth Murray in the offseason kind of as an off-ball linebacker, but not one that you feel like you can slap the green dot on to organize the defense. They want him to just go hunt, just go play freely, use his speed, use his athleticism. For that to be the case, you need somebody holding it down with that other inside linebacker spot. And Junior Colson seems to project as a guy that could do that from day one. So if I had to put my money on it, I'd probably go defense, Russ, because that's where most of the needs lie at this point. And I still think you can find wide receiver help in the fourth, fifth round. But we'll see. We'll see if they try to trade back if some of these top talents come flying off the board really quickly in the second round. But then the question obviously is, you know, what are your suitors at that point?
All right, very good. He's Lucas Panzeca, proud graduate of the Fan Run Academy of Broadcasting, or FAB, as we say around here. 104.5 The Zone, Titans Radio in Nashville. LP, you got to come by and see the new White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. They're fantastic.
Oh, I will be in Knoxville for a wedding Memorial Day weekend. So Friday, May 24th, I will be there. I will come see you guys Friday,
all right,
Friday
afternoon. More than welcome to jump on with us.
We'll book you for an in-studio appearance.
Do it. Let's do it.
Have a great weekend, man.
Yeah, same to you guys. See y'all.
Lucas Panzeca making his presence felt
fantastic
this afternoon.
News.
You guys feel better or worse, about the same, after his talk on Latham?
Oh, just fully understand it now.
I never had a big problem with Latham. I was a little disappointed to hear that they might go defense with their pick tonight.
You want that Ladd McConkey kid.
I think the top three available receivers are all pretty.
Who are the top three?
Pretty good.
Is this going to be the second time we get screwed out of McConkey? It won't be Cornbread's fault this time.
It's Cornbread.
No.
Kid wanted to be a Vol.
Adonai Mitchell from Texas is number one. He ran
another corner. Him too. They both wanted to come here.
I know. He ran a 4.34. Ladd McConkey.
We ain't getting Adonai.
And Keon Coleman from Florida State. He did not run a great 40, but if you remember what he did against LSU in game one last year,
yeah,
I like that potential. Not a burner, but a big physical receiver. I think he'd pair well with the other team.
Well,
that
what's
they got.
The bigger need? I mean, we've got Ridley, DeAndre.
I don't look at receiver as a
huge need.
No.
I mean, I would like another one, but
it's kind of a luxury. Unless the right person falls. I mean, if a Donnie Mitchell's sitting there, yeah.
So many Tennessee ties, Junior Colson.
Former teammate of mine.
On there. Hey.
Brentwood Blaze.
Colson. I'd be happy if they picked Colson at 38. Dude's a beast. You heard Lucas. It's going to free up.
You know what? It's maybe just a little bit of, we'll say, BTS, battered Titans fan, or whatever I'm trying to say here. But I would not be terribly opposed to going O-line again.
Wow.
I mean, are you guys
lower guys? As
you guys think
tackle?
We're set?
No,
just another
offensive line was garbage last year.
Just another tackle body that you can either develop, and maybe it is a left tackle, and you leave Latham at right tackle, and then you're set. Or maybe you do a reverse switch, and you. I would not be opposed to another tackle
with the 38 pick.
Yeah.
I want to go defense.
Quick timeout. The drive continues. 865-288-3131. Your number to get on board. It's more Fan Run Radio on the way. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. Lucas Panseca, 104.5 The Zone. Bear, what did you learn?
Basically, I mean, he just spelled everything out so crystal clear about once Alt was off the board, Bill Callahan was going to take who he had as his best lineman.
Are we buying that? Are we buying that Latham, that he had him rated even better than Joe Alt?
No.
That post-pick no. spin.
No way they had that guy rated higher than Alt. Although I did go back and look with the – you got to look at the cons on all these guys, including Alt. He's not like a surefire. I mean, nobody's a surefire. You never know.
And they're going to move him to right tackle? That makes me even
they're moving
more
him.
Mad.
Yeah,
I don't understand why, because, I mean, there was some buzz that Harbaugh was going to take Latham. There was a lot of talk about that because they do need a right tackle. You figure Latham would be right up Harbaugh. I mean, just a mauler.
I guess he wasn't number one on Harbaugh's board.
I mean, is Callahan really – I mean, he's gambling a lot that he's going to be able to develop this guy and playing left tackle at the NFL level.
Also, not to be Debbie Downer here, but you do have to – I will bring up and we will give Davey Hudson an I told you so. Houston, this might have been before you joined forces with the drive here, but Davey was adamant at the end of last football season that the Titans should tank the end of the season and not beat the Jacksonville Jaguars in a completely meaningless game.
Yep, John brought that up last night. Sore spot for those who understand how the draft works.
Yeah.
If the Titans had swallowed their pride and taken the L against the Jags, they would have picked before the Chargers, and Joe Alt would be a Titan today. Here you go, Dave-O.
I told you so.
He did.
I remember the
right to your face.
Text.
It's true.
I
told
you so. I think one of them said, we really need to lose this game if you want Joe Alt.
I think I argued with him I can't remember. It was one, but it was half-hearted. I knew he was right.
He's always right. Usually 98% of the time when it's stuff like this, Davey's telling you the truth. maybe not what you want to hear in the heat of the moment.
Well, Davey's good at times of separating diehard fandom, which he is of the Titans, and then just math.
Just and the analytics.
This is math.
Cold, yeah. Hard reality.
Look, lose this game, pick higher, get the guy you want, and that beating the Jags cost you.
And he was right. I mean, at that point in the season, I mean, beating them didn't matter.
Well, and here's the fun thing about the draft is we do reserve the right to retract the I told you so if Joe Alt turns out to be a bust and J.C. Latham turns out to be a raging success.
True.
This is how these things work. Let's get a call from Dan. Good afternoon, Dan. You're on the drive, Fan Run Radio.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good. I just had a question. Do you think the Titans will ever consider drafting a player out of Tennessee to help get some more fans? It seems like they'll draft everyone from every school but Tennessee.
Yes. I think they would consider drafting a guy from anybody. They're never going to draft, and no NFL team is ever going to draft a player based on where he went to college.
Mm-hmm.
No, I totally agree with that, but I'm just saying, like, in the past, you've had some pretty good players. Like, last year, I think it was more of the Levis Hooker thing, but when was the last time they actually drafted a notable player out of Tennessee? It just seems like they always pass. Was it Justin Hunter?
That's the last one I can think of that was solid at Tennessee.
I'm trying to go in the way back machine.
And again, they did not draft Justin Hunter based on the fact that he might sell a few more tickets to Tennessee fans who liked Justin Hunter played 0% into the decision to make that pick, just like the fact that Will Levis went to Kentucky and super popular Hendon Hooker was still on the board played 0% last year, as it should have. I'm not saying like maybe Hooker turns out to be the better quarterback. I don't know. Time will tell. It's like this Latham Alt conversation we just had. Jury's still out.
Yeah.
But it should not. That's the way it should be. Like, you know, Ran and Vrabes at that point should not have considered Hendon Hooker and Levis as a Tennessee Kentucky thing. No, that mean that.
Oh,
you don't
okay.
worry about
no.
the ACL. You know, you just don't worry about the college aspect
of
it.
No. There are only three Vols I can ever recall wearing Titans uniforms, and one's Justin Hunter. The other two are specialists.
Travis Henry.
Troy.
Did they draft Henry?
Troy.
No. You don't remember Travis Henry playing for the Tennessee Titans?
What was this?
Troy
Fleming. It was like the early 2000s, but
I was born in 2002, Russell.
Oh, my God.
They drafted Theo Jackson last year.
That is true.
Household name.
2 years ago. Sorry, 2 years ago.
Well, I'm an idiot. I apologize.
Oh, no.
No.
You're not.
We get the sentiment. Yeah. Like, I totally understand that thought.
Okay, well, thank y'all for taking my call.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. I mean, it was hard to swallow the Will Levis pill. It's
but all
for
of
some
did.
Reason not as hard to swallow the Jace like
Jesse Mahalona was drafted by the Titans.
Yep.
Oh, geez, I completely whiffed on Albert Haynesworth.
I remember him playing. Yeah, he wasn't drafted.
That's what I mean. They're like players I can remember wearing Titans uniforms that came through here.
No, he was drafted by the Titans. Number one, first round.
Yeah.
Pick number 15. For some why did I think?
You were thinking Redskins
conflated.
And the
yeah, you were
big deal
conflated.
He signed.
I mean, I knew
there.
He played for the Titans. I guess I just completely forgot that they drafted him.
Andre Gerard. That was when they got rid of him, wasn't it? After the stomp.
I thought about this one and I wasn't sure. They did draft Joey Kent in the second round in 97.
Yeah,
where were you on that one, Tucker?
Non-existent.
I know.
I remember being pretty fired up about that, but that was. For a young football fan, that was a big lesson early in my life in that success at the college level doesn't always translate to success in the pros. And with Joey Kent, it was just an interesting lesson because he had such a great college career, but let's be honest, he was in the right place at the right time when number 16 came to the helm. Joey Kent does not put up those numbers playing with even Andy Kelly or Jeff Francis.
He might have if he had been a Colt and he got to continue playing with Peyton. Him and Peyton had like
See, I don't
some
think so.
Kind of
I
telepathic.
Think, I think Joey Kent was always probably a step too slow for the NFL, but you didn't notice that in college because Peyton was putting it right on him.
He's pretty sure-handed. I just don't think he had a very good quarterback. He just didn't work out for him.
Oh, he was. I mean, he wasn't athletic enough.
I'm just kind of uncomfortable with the.
No, it's fine. I mean, you know, Marcus Nash took over that role when Joey graduated in 96, and Nash was was more productive than Joey was in that season, and he went on to have a better career in the NFL because he was more he was faster.
But very good for Denver.
Isn't it funny though how I'm sure we'll see this in the Heupel era here.
Sure.
Of receivers that are super productive here that for whatever reason it doesn't translate to next level success.
That's a weird part about the draft. I mean, that kid, the cornerback from Toledo, he grew up apparently 30 miles from Gainesville. Mullen didn't recruit him.
Really?
Boy, Quinion. Saban did.
He tried just he gave him a strong ass offer.
Saban recruited him when he wasn't supposed to, when he wasn't even in the portal.
Tip of the cap to that kid for sticking with Toledo. Not a lot of kids would have done that. They would have jumped.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that maybe he should have gone to Alabama, but I guess he's vindicated. He got drafted in the first round out of Toledo. Quinion Mitchell, 22nd overall to your Philadelphia Eagles. Getting ready. We have another big ticket giveaway coming up here.
This one's pretty wild, yeah. It's coming from new management. There's a massive ticket giveaway. Hot ticket.
Tim McGraw is in town tonight.
Going to rock the arena's face off.
You name me can you name me any Tim McGraw song?
I can name you one Tim McGraw song.
You can?
Yeah. Because I got introduced to the guy briefly, the guy who wrote the song. Years and years ago. Actually, I can name a couple. Just to See You Smile. I met the guy that wrote that.
Sounds terrible.
It was a huge hit.
There's a reason he's selling out the arena tonight. We got a pair of tickets. Your chance to win coming up.
Thought we had.
No, we have three.
Double check. I think we
got
three
tickets.
Yeah, I believe it's three tickets.
Together?
And together.
From what I'm hearing, they're
extra primo good. Very close.
These ain't 300 levels.
No. 100 level, I believe.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what that means, it means you are on the floor. Seats 1, 2, and 3 in the row also.
Aisle seats.
Tug McGraw's kid.
Oh, that's right.
Great actor, too.
Don't they think – is Tug part of the – have you heard the conspiracy theory about the artificial turf at Veterans Stadium being responsible for the deaths of multiple former Phillies and Eagles players?
Oh, I fully buy into that one.
Without even knowing what it is?
I just remember that field, they said it was like playing on steel.
Well, no, they say there are chemicals in the turf.
Oh.
That made the guys go crazy. Insane in the membrane. Stay with us. Hour number 3 of The Drive coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.